truth.
You're listening to Truth Revolution Radio, broadcasting live on We the People Radio Network, the official broadcast of truthaction.org. My name is Cosmos, and I'm your host. And this is the Friday, October 19th, 2007 edition. We are broadcasting live from deep inside the real front lines of a real info war. This is not an anti-New World Order cottage industry slash empire slash freak show. This is the real deal. This is the guerrilla info war. And we're not just reporting on it here. We are creating it. We're in the front lines. We're doing the dirty work. We're not sitting around reading news stories, blowing them all out of proportion, getting you all hyped up and telling you to buy a million DVDs, books, etc., what have you. We're making the news. We are making the news. At truthaction.org, we kicked off an ongoing global grassroots campaign for 9/11 truth and justice that has swept around the world. We take action on the 11th day of every month. And in monthly increments, monthly waves, we see the action build and spread further around the world. More and more people standing up for 9/11 truth, more and more groups starting every month, more and more actions everywhere. And the people who are primarily interested in selling stuff, in building up their name, in building a following for themselves as personalities, aren't interested in helping promote this campaign. You won't hear about it from them, and frankly, we're glad about it. We don't need your help, and we don't want it. It makes our success that much more beautiful and profound. No, we're not selling stuff. We're giving it all away for free. We're giving away inspiration, motivation, organization, representation, all of it for free. And we work around the clock nonstop to do it. And we do need your help. We're not selling shit. We need help. There's office space. There's utilities. There's all this stuff that needs to be taken care of. And we have set some goals for donations that just covers the bare minimum. Running expenses, the operation for truthaction.org, promoting this international campaign of action on the 11th day of every month, and also this radio show, which comes to you live three nights a week, and is the only place where you'll get real news on this campaign because of the 9/11 truth gatekeeper blackout. They don't see how it adds up to dollars and cents for them. So they don't report on it, but you get it here live three nights a week. We really need your help. You know, if you want to give us $5,000, that'll be great. We set a limit for $3,000 over the next couple of months because it's the bare minimum operating expenses. Anything you can give helps out a lot. I'm doing all this work for free, nonstop every day from the time I wake up to the time I go to sleep. We could really use your help. Anything at all helps. Truthaction.org. Donate. All right, so we've got Mike in Florida on the line, and he's got an action report from down there in Melbourne, Florida, the heart of the military-industrial complex. Mike takes action on every 11th. He started the Melbourne, Florida 11th Day Actions, which have seen an amazing increase in the last 2 months. They were going out there with two, three, four people every month. September 11th, it blew up to like 20 people. It had like a lot of people out there. October 11th, Mike, are you with us?
Yeah, I'm here, Cosmos. How you doing?
Hey, Mike, how's it going, man?
Pretty good.
Cool. Mike in Florida. This is Mike Edgerton. He is the first voice you hear on every episode of Truth Revolution Radio after Johnny Cash and John Lennon and Dead Prez. Comes Mike.
You know, that's funny you say that, Cosmos, because when I was calling you just now, I'm driving in my truck on my way back from this event that I just went to, and I call on my cell phone, and the first thing I hear, the phone didn't ring. All I heard was me yelling. These people, 9/11 was an inside job.
Yeah, who's that loudmouth?
Yeah.
So you're just coming back from an event with Mike Gravel?
Yeah, Mike Gravel was here in Brevard County, which is part of the Space Coast. If anybody's not familiar with Brevard County, it's where Cape Canaveral is, NASA, where they launch the shuttles and stuff. We got Lockheed Martin, Harris, DRS, Intersil, a lot of the military-industrial complex corporations that are pretty much the war machine are right here in the heart of this county. And whether the event was, it was a Democratic banquet or whatever to announce the candidates that are going to be running for council seats and different seats and stuff and Congress and stuff like that. And the guest speaker was Mike Gravel. And, you know, I went there, you know, basically to get him to elaborate more on why he feels that we need a new investigation because, you know, he came out within the past few months recently, other 9/11 Truth Movement people have approached him and given him information and given his people and his campaign information and stuff. And he, like a good American, has been doing the research of people that has been given the information. He hasn't just, you know, threw it to the back burner or whatever. He did actually look into it, and he said, yes, we need a new investigation. He pretty much touched back on what he had already said. And, you know, he brought up a lot of good points about the military-industrial complex, and he reiterated on Eisenhower's farewell speech and stuff. And I was able to, after the event, get a short interview with him and ask him to elaborate more. And he was more detailed this time in saying, you know, why and what needs to happen with the investigation as far as gaining subpoena power and stuff like that, and why that's important. So, yeah, it was great. You know, it was just, you know, not a lot of real more, you know, as far as new news, you know. He did elaborate more, and, you know, I think that that's great. And
well, that's good.
He brought it up in his speech to the people without, you know, having to be asked the question.
Oh, really? How did he bring it up?
He brought 9/11 up. I think, you know, he was going off in sections and stuff. You know, he started out talking about education, and then he went to healthcare, and then he went to the war in Iraq. And then he, you know, kind of from there went on to, I believe, government corruption was kind of the topic. And he brought up, I didn't really like the way he said it, but I understand where he's coming from because you have to appease the crowd of people that are sitting there, the sheeple that are in the audience. He said, you know, and I get asked questions from the 9/11 conspiracy people about having a new investigation. And then he went on to say, you know, that we do need a new investigation because, you know, if you look back in history with, like, the Warren Commission and the JFK stuff, you know, as more information comes out after those people had supposedly wrapped up their investigation, as more, you know, as more information comes out, it becomes clear that, you know, there's ground for a new investigation. He says that 9/11 Truth is a classic example of that. You know, we have so much more information has been brought to light since, you know, the official lie was published in the 9/11 Commission report that, you know, we do need a new investigation.
Did he actually say 9/11 conspiracy people, or were you paraphrasing?
He said that, but he didn't really mean it in a derogatory manner. He meant it as a way to let people know, you know, because that's what we're referred to. So I guess he was just trying, because anybody who's not hip to or in tune with, you know, what he might have been talking about, you know, that you know, as sad as it is to say, that's how you, you know.
Yeah, we just need to help educate these people with some new language. They can say the 9/11 truth people. That works. That works fine. And then they'll figure out what he's talking about by how he follows. Well, this is good news. I'm glad to hear it. And, of course, we have to be careful about politicians, always, always. Be careful with the politicians, you know, incorporating this stuff, trying to use this stuff as talking points or whatever, you know, all that kind of stuff. But I'm glad to hear it. You know, I like to call Mike Gravel Mike Gravel. And, you know. Pretend he's from the Flintstones, you know, with Barney Rubble and Mike Gravel.
He gave a good speech. I mean, he did touch on the 9/11. All in all, his speech was what you want to hear as far as truth to power. I mean, he was calling Bush an idiot. You know, people giggled and stuff, but he said, yeah, you know, he even went so far as to say he'd like to punch him in the face and stuff like that. So. He's not your typical, he is a politician, but he's not your typical politician. He calls a spade, and, you know, he speaks from the heart. And, what was I going to say? He had an announcement to make that he found out some information right prior to, going on to speak that, from his people, his campaign people, that MSNBC is now, taking him off the, platform or whatever as far as, the next presidential, the next Democratic debate. He is
going
to be allowed to participate. He wasn't really given an explanation why, other than a simple, that you do not qualify, you do not meet the qualifications. And I think it had to do with, you know, visiting New Hampshire a certain amount of times. And he brought up the point that he recently bought a home in New Hampshire. So he doesn't know where they're coming from as far as that goes. But yeah. MSNBC is now blocking Mike Gravel from the debate.
How is it that these corporate media giants get to, extend such a heavy hand in our electoral process? That's a rhetorical question, of course.
Hopefully this will spark into something and cause a lot of commotion, because that's not right, you know. The guy hasn't raised the millions of dollars that the other corporate whores have. You know, he's still a presidential candidate. He's met all the qualifications to be a Democratic candidate, and for that to do that is completely, injustice at its finest.
Yeah, hey, speaking of corporate media, we've got some late-breaking news from the truthaction.org chat room. I've been informed that some 9/11 truthers were, quote, totally derailing Bill Maher's show right now.
Awesome.
Unquote.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't have any more details than that, but it sounds good. Of course, I don't have a TV either. Can't stand the stuff, but this is the word.
that'd be good.
Yeah, I'd like to see.
To stay on him. Stay on people like that. Stay on the Amy Goodman. Stay on the Bill Maher. Stay on the John Keith and those gatekeepers and those people that, you know, want to ignore us for whatever reasons they have. You know.
Yeah, and don't just call them names.
That's
don't
right.
just call them a gatekeeper. Confront them with facts. You know, confront them with facts. Anyway, yeah, we got to stick on these people. So, hey, Mike, real quick, if you had another action you were telling me about before, just was it last night or the day before?
Last night there was a forum discussion panel group session or whatever you want to call it at the Community College, which is a big campus here in Melbourne, Florida, Brevard County. And the discussion of the topic was, good things to do or good things that not necessarily good things that come from 9/11, but how can we turn 9/11 into a good thing as far as, you know, changing the world and, you know, the way people view the United States and stuff. And they had a guest speaker. It was actually two. It was a husband and wife, Elizabeth and Stephen. I believe it was Elizabeth and Stephen Alderman. Their son perished in the World Trade Center on September 11th. And what they're doing now is they started a foundation. I guess he was some kind of psychiatrist or something. So they raised funds, and used the 9/11 ticket to raise funds and travel the globe, working with third world countries that are affected by terrorism and dealing with the psychological aspect of, you know, the effects of terrorism on people. And, I brought along a group of 9/11 truth people with me. Dr. Bob Bowman was in attendance. He was also in attendance at the Gravel thing tonight. I forgot to mention that. He was there in support. And
cool.
So, we were able to fill out these question cards. We weren't able to ask them ourselves with our own words. And mine never got answered because, of course, you know, 30 questions went in and we ran out of time because people babble. But we did raise the issue if the family members were aware of the NORAD, you know, stand-down orders and stuff like that. And they had went on to say that, yes, 6 months, the following 6 months after 9/11, the wife was, you know, heavily involved in, you know, digging up information, investigating, wanting to know why. And that they feel that, you know, they basically, you know, without coming out and saying it, due to their, you know, their affiliations with this group, they couldn't. There's a non-partisan, non-political group that they're working with. They're not allowed really to, I guess, for whatever reason, speak about stuff like that.
We got a minute here.
Another word called for a new investigation. They said that they feel that the investigation was a farce and a cover-up. And I was able to speak with the couple after. You know, and I gave them a bunch of literature and information and DVDs and stuff, and they were aware of the Jersey Girls, and they actually had met members of the steering committee and stuff, and they know that it's a cover-up in the forest, and that they thanked us for what we're doing, and it was good, and we were able to inform the entire crowd there, too. We handed out a bunch of DVDs and flyers and stuff, so that went real well.
Nice. That's great. And so you guys, and your actions down there in Melbourne, Florida, kind of blew up.
Yeah,
recently,
I came back to New York, September, man, and the group of guys, the couple of guys that I had, you know, that were coming out there with me since February, you know, I was, of course, in New York with you guys, and I come back, man, and there's, you know, almost 20 people there, you know.
That's awesome, man, right there in Melbourne, Florida, and you kicked it off, and look what happens, you go away for a month, and hey, they all decide to come out.
Yeah, so, yeah, and everybody's real stoked, and we're starting to get more organized and strategize about different things we want to do.
Cool. Well, here we are at the break. Mike, it's great to hear from you. It's great to hear your actions, spreading the truth. Keep up the awesome work down there in Melbourne, Florida.
Thank you, man.
It's always great to hear from you. We'll be right back after this break with our guest, Nick Levese. Yeah, we're back on Truth Revolution Radio. This is the official broadcast of TruthAction.org. We're broadcasting live on We the People Radio Network. If you haven't been to TruthAction.org recently, you got to go there and check it out. We still have reports coming in from all over the world. The actions of October 11th. We're promoting action on the 11th day of every month until justice and these actions have swept around the world. We've got some new reports in, a great video from the guys at Philly, 9/11 Truth. It's beautiful stuff. You can check it out. Also, there's a great promo video for the upcoming November 11th action in Los Angeles. We're going to be taking action everywhere, all around the world, on November 11th. And in Los Angeles, they are planning a large regional gathering from all over Southern California. So if you're in Southern California, hook up with the people, the good people from Los Angeles. There's a whole bunch of groups that are working together, the LA 9/11 Truth, We Are Change LA. They're calling for people to come up from all over Southern California, and they put together a really great video promoting the event. You can check that out. That's right at the top of the front page at truthaction.org. And please, 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 wherever you are on November 11th, join us in action for 9/11 Truth and Justice. And then send in your pics and videos to truthaction.org and help us represent this campaign, because how many times do I got to say it? That's such a big part of this campaign, is the representation and showing other people what we're doing. You know, I'm really glad that people are taking action all over the place, but we also need to represent the campaign and show people what we're doing. So please, please, please send us your pics and videos. I will trawl the entire internet searching for them if I have to, but it's a lot easier if I don't. Well, tonight we've got another great guest. And for me, it's like Old Home Week here on Truth Revolution Radio. On Monday night, we talked to Jim Hoffman. And if you missed that show, you should go to the WTPRN.com archives and check it out, because that was a kick-ass show. Jim Hoffman, I've known for a really long time. And tonight, our guest, we're going to be talking to Nick Levese. He's a co-founder of 911truth.org. I've known him from way back, too. And we just hooked back up, talked to him for the first time in years tonight. I'm really excited to have him onto the show. So without further ado, let us welcome to Truth Revolution Radio, Nick Levese. Hey, Nick, how's it going, man?
Hi, it's great to be here. How are you?
Thanks. I'm doing great. I'm really glad that you could join us on the show here.
Well, you know, it's midnight here, so I hope I'm still as coherent as I sort of was before.
Oh, coherence is overrated.
Well.
But, yeah, we do appreciate you staying up. This is, of course, the late show, especially on the East Coast. It's, you know, midnight already out there heading up
on
this
isn't normally that late for me, but maybe tonight a little.
But, Nick, you're someone who's perspective. I really appreciate you. You're a brilliant mind. You're a great writer. You are a co-founder of 911truth.org, which got kicked off starting, I guess, actually right after I met you in person, which was at the 2004 Inquiry Conference here in San Francisco, a multi-day conference. And I believe it was right after that that a small group of you guys started 911truth.org.
Well, yes, it was right after March 2004 at the San Francisco conference that 911truth.org got started as an organization under that name. The website at 911truth.org had already existed, and I was administering it, trying to do, by myself basically, trying to do the same function as best as I could as one person of being a kind of clearinghouse or switchboard for all kinds of actions that were happening, and to try to make the link between the actions and the research, and, you know, try to present kind of the most credible possible platform. Well, you know, I don't know how well I was doing it or wasn't it, but in San Francisco, a group of us decided that the right name for an organization would be 911truth.org, the reason being that way you're both saying what the program is and giving the website.
Yeah, we copied
time.
That with truthaction.org. I thought that was a good strategy, and that's
yeah.
Kind
otherwise,
of like
the media won't say your website.
Right.
So that's
right.
Why you're kind of stuck always.
People,
you know,
still try to turn it into Truth Action, but it's like, no, the organization or the non-organization is called truthaction.org.
Right, and you know, you have to insist on that. Although at first it sounded just terrible to me. I mean, I preferred something more old-fashioned, like 911 Truth Alliance.
Right.
Which is what a lot of the groups were called, but anyway,
you got to get those people to get to the site and get the information.
Exactly that. You know, the site, unfortunately, or for better or worse, I should say, you know, is the center of action in our period. You
so
know,
just to be totally clear, so 911truth.org was actually a website that you had set up previously that you were doing this stuff with before the actual organization was.
Right. I was running that domain, and a lot of the people who later ended up involved in the organization would, you know, actually it was a lot like Truth Action, except it was kind of the first time. And it was 2003 that you suddenly had a lot of conferences and meetings on the occasion of the second anniversary after September 11th. You know, it really was getting off the internet for the first time, and trying to create mass meetings all around the world. I was involved in organizing one in Berlin, where I lived at that time, and there were others in San Francisco, a very big one in New York, in New Hampshire, all around. Toronto, of course, was there early. So they would all send in their information, and I'd try to put it up as quickly as possible, just using the old style HTML. It's not like I had a back end input or anything like.
I hear that.
Yeah. And, you know, then after San Francisco, the idea was to create, kind of platform, you know, that would that could present, you know, the best research insofar as that's possible, and, you know, the best actions, and kind of be a clearinghouse. And I think it's, you know, done more good than bad.
Well, through the years, I'd have to say, I mean, I think, you know, we had Janice Matthews from 911truth.org who's working with the group currently on a couple of weeks ago, and I was saying then that I think, you know, it's still, it's one of the best sites. I think it's, you know, done a good job through the years of maintaining.
Well, I think so as well, although I am no longer as actively involved. I will write occasional articles at this point, but, you know, I am still, you know, I still feel a great loyalty to the site, you know, for all the work that we all put into it. And, you know, for, I think so, you know, you just have to say, you know, the perfect is the enemy of the good, and I think 911truth.org is at least a good platform for the movement.
Yeah, for sure. It's a good portal and a good entryway for people who are fresh to the topic. There's a real a minimum of the bad stuff on there, and a lot of good direction to a lot of good stuff. Is there? Do you have a home base on the internet now? A place that you're
not one that I'm maintaining actively at the moment. You know, I'm mostly. You know, I've mostly restricted myself to forum posts and the like recently. I have summeroftruth.org, but embarrassingly, if you go there, it's still advertising an event for September 2006. I need to catch up. Although if you, you know, delve into the pages, you'll find, I don't know, about 50 different items there that should be of interest.
But, yeah, there's still a lot of cool stuff.
It needs a definite reorganization, let's just put it at that.
Yeah, okay, we got a break here, and we'll be right back after this break, and we got a whole lot of stuff here, a lot of good ideas we're going to share.
You still think that jet fuel brought down the World Trade Center? Does anybody else see a problem here? If the government has nothing to hide, why are they so afraid to answer a few questions? This story does not add up.
No, it just doesn't add up. We're back here at Truth Revolution Radio, the official broadcast of TruthAction.org, broadcasting live on We the People Radio Network, and we're talking with our guest, Nick Levese. He's been involved with 9/11 Truth work for a long time. He was a co-founder of 9/11truth.org. We were talking about that just a little bit before the break. And right now, I want to go back just a little bit farther and ask Nick, how did you first get involved with all this 9/11 truth business?
Well, it's funny you should ask that question. Maybe I'm going to end up confessing a bias here, also give away what an old man I am. as it happens, I remembered the 80s very well, and I happen to remember a group that I thought of as the Bush Mob, who were responsible for assorted crimes in Central America and the crack for guns pipeline and a whole bunch of covert operations, including wanting to impose martial law in the United States. You may remember those names, Oliver North, John Poindexter, George Bush. And, you know, when I saw in 2000 that this crew was not only staging a comeback to open power, complete with, you know, Cheney and Rumsfeld and the whole crowd, you know, and I saw that they actually had to steal the election, you know, I knew, for me, it meant only one thing. And again, you know, maybe I'm confessing a bias. It meant only that a big war would have to come. That's what this crew has always been about. Basically, you know, I hate to say that I was joking about it because it hadn't happened yet. So, you know, it just didn't seem as real to me as it did on September 11th. But the joke was, when's the Reichstag fire? You know, that's what I'd say to people.
Really? Yeah. Before September 11th?
Well, yes, on the basis that, you know, the Papa Bush Mob, you know, since I never really took seriously Sonny Boy as the front man.
Right.
You know, you have to have, you can only, some front man too if you can't even speak the language. But regardless, you know, it just seemed to me, you know, as good as a certainty, you know, seeing especially those faces, Rumsfeld, Cheney, Kissinger on the sidelines, involved again.
Oh, man.
You know, in the end, they brought
crazy.
Back everybody. Negroponte.
It's so crazy. All these
Abrams,
guys who were totally,
right.
I mean, they were just, I mean, everything short of convicted. Some of them weren't. I mean,
so
they're all
the
back
day,
in power.
On September 11th, I guess everyone's story almost starts with, I got a phone call and somebody told me to turn on the TV.
Right.
And, you know, when I did, you know, I was in shock, like I presume almost everybody else. And, you know, this was the first thought that occurred to me. I was also extremely angry and upset. And, you know, New York is my hometown, and I'm calling frantically to find out about family and such, all the reactions one would expect. And, you know, at some point I said to myself, hold on here. You know, don't just confirm your bias. Make sure you actually know what you're thinking, because, you know, I could also see, you know, this isn't going to be a popular position to take in the next few days or weeks or months, you know.
Well, what were you thinking that day?
I was thinking this is or could be, sure looks like, a stage-managed, orchestrated event for the purposes of activating the Bush regime, which I was already thinking of as the Bush regime, but I was wondering, well, how are they going to get their pretext for the war they're surely going to want in Iraq? Of that I was also certain, because that was something like 30 years in the planning, and not in a particularly secret fashion, you know.
Well, if you were saying you know, when the Reichstag fire before 9/11, your eyes must have been popping out on that day.
Well, yeah. In some ways, I even blame myself, to tell you the truth. I mean, it's a funny thing, you know. It sounds a bit megalomaniacal, and I'm aware of that, and, you know, I don't really mean that seriously. But in some ways, I was thinking, you know, a lot of people, you know, I'm just one little person, but a lot of us little people knew what these people were about, you know, and should have worked harder beforehand, you know, to do something about it. It shouldn't have come to this. To me, it seemed like a very logical progression that one day this system that has done so much in the way of destruction as a way of creating new opportunities for profit, that has over and over, you know, created wars, you know, and then turned these into industries, you know, both in the destruction and in the rebuilding and in the preparation for the next war. It seemed very logical to me that one day this system that's done coup d'etats all around the world would bring it home to a place like New York City and Washington, D.C. So that was my first reaction, you know, and then I said to myself, step back and, you know, don't go crazy just yet because you don't know what's happening. You know, find out as much as you can. So I stayed quiet about it. You know, I didn't, you know, make a public spectacle of what I was thinking for months. You know, and I did, you know, I found out everything I could. I did all the research I could. At some point, I think in October 2001, you know, I started to become rather certain of the idea that something had been stage-managed, that it had been orchestrated, because that, you may remember, was the time of the anthrax. And
right.
That was just so obvious, such an obvious psychological operation.
And that's just totally jumped off the radar.
Right, and at the time, it was, like, treated as more important than 9/11. Not only is this the new 9/11, but it's the beginning of a whole series, and it's so huge and so gigantic. And at the time already, you know, the stuff started coming out about, you know, the anthrax, of course, is from U.S. stockpiles. The stockpiles were actually destroyed, you know, the originals of the Ames strain, with the approval of the FBI just as the attacks started or had started, which is really, you know, an amazing fact, you know, that was in the New York Times, and yet that wasn't pursued. And who were the targets? They're introducing the USA Patriot Act, and, you know, here this anthrax that's being described as military grade and something that no one person could put together would require a big laboratory is being mailed to the Democratic leadership who had just made a couple of squeaky little noises of suspicion about the Patriot Act. You know, they were just making it sound like, well, maybe the Patriot Act is an overreaction. You know, and suddenly they get the anthrax, everyone shuts up, Congress goes home, and the last thing they do just before is they approve the Patriot Act.
Yeah, what was the timeline on that with the anthrax vis-a-vis the vote on the Patriot Act?
Ah, well, this is funny. You know, the piece of mail that was directed to Leahy specifically, who was the one who had expressed some reservations and who was in charge of the Judiciary Committee, supposedly this was only found on November 14th, although it had been mailed on October, let me be sure I've got this right, 8th. Right. There was a first wave of anthrax mailing to media figures, if you'll remember, at the end of September. And then on October 8th, these two even more deadly letters, at least that's what we were told, were sent to Daschle and Leahy. And this was exactly at the time that the USA Patriot Act had been introduced to the Judiciary Committee just before, and when Leahy had it in his power to effect passage of the Patriot Act. But supposedly, it wasn't actually discovered until November 14th. But Daschle's was discovered much sooner, and next thing you know, all the Senate offices are shut down. You know, they're tearing everything apart. In the Rayburn Building in Washington, where the Senate has its offices, and you know, everything's completely disrupted, and it's under these circumstances that they quote unquote debate the Patriot Act and then vote it in 92-1 in the Senate and something like, I don't know, 400-13 in the House. So everyone, you know, almost unanimously going for this act, which, you know, I don't know if we should go into that now. You know, all the ways in which it violates the Constitution, it abrogates constitutionally guaranteed natural rights of all human beings against search and seizure, the Fourth Amendment, also the First Amendment.
A despicable, despicable piece of...
Absolutely, and then it has this...
I don't even want to call it legislation, it's just trash.
It has this definition of terrorism that basically boils down to anything you do that might potentially be dangerous to people or property in order to affect politics. In other words, you know, Martin Luther King would also potentially, you know, be a terrorist or be definable as a terrorist under this act. You know, any kind of civil disobedience potentially can also be brought up under the letter of this act. And, of course, this was the first in a whole series of such measures. So one thing that there was never in doubt is that 9/11, you know, the octopus, let's call it, metaphorically here, seized it as an opportunity to do absolutely everything they'd ever dreamed of in the way of new measures for domestic repression and in the way of new measures for profit.
Everything they ever wanted, they
right.
got. And we're coming up. We got a break right here, Nick. Sorry to cut you off. Let's pick this up on the other side of this break. We'll be right back on Truth Revolution Radio. Revolution Radio, broadcasting live on We the People Radio Network. This is the official broadcast of TruthAction.org. My name is Cosmos. I'm your host. And we're here talking with our guest, Nicholas Levice. I'm very honored to have Nick join us tonight on this broadcast. Nick was one of the original founders of 911truth.org. We talked about the origins of 911truth.org and also Nick's early involvement in 9/11 Truth itself, and we're just kind of covering the basics, the foundation here. And you know, I gotta say, Nick's a brilliant mind. Nick is someone who I really want to have involved in this movement for 9/11 Truth and Justice because his perspective, he's got some good stuff to say, and we're just kind of covering the basics here. And this is the last segment of the show, so we have a little bit more time to talk here. But I want to, Nick, if you're into it, I'd love to have you back on the show sometime next week where we can kind of branch out into some more topics after just kind of covering the foundations here.
Well, I think I'd love to do that. You know, I really appreciate all the praise you just heaped on me. I hope I deserve even a tenth of it. You know, that's very kind of you.
Well, we need all the good minds that we can get, and you're definitely a good mind. I mean, all the way back. You know, I remember I first, I guess, encountered you. It was probably mid 2002, maybe late 2002.
On the web, I guess you're saying.
Yeah. Online, we didn't meet in person until 2004. But you know, I was always an admirer of you know, of your work, of the stuff that you put out, really great analysis of 9/11 itself, just what was going on, and you know, we've seen a lot of stuff happen.
Thanks a lot. You know, I mean, that's really.
Oh yeah, I mean it. You know.
And you know, so you know, likewise, I'd like to say, you know, what you're doing is great. You know, you've definitely, you know, picked up and done something that's needed right now. You know, you're very much keeping this thing going. You know, with your efforts and everyone involved in the 11th of the month actions.
Yeah, we're doing what we can, and it's pretty crazy, and we're doing it on a shoestring. I mean, basically, what happened was, you know, because I've been, you know, I lost my Uncle Mickey on.
It's always been on a shoestring, though.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean,
well,
let's
hey,
be real. You know,
real,
there's no money in this. That's
the real stuff.
That's
nothing.
The funniest accusation, by the way, that comes from the self-appointed fanatic debunkers. You know, I'm fine. I don't want to call them too many names, but there's a certain crew of people who do associate with each other, who do cross-link, you know, who seem to have dedicated themselves out of whatever motivation to trying to come up with whatever sophistry is possible to just bury the whole issue. You know, there's always an answer to everything, even if there is no answer, and they never look at the big picture. Anyway,
yeah,
one of the most ridiculous things they say is about all the money that you know, we're making selling T-shirts.
Right. Well, hey, some people are making a good buck on T-shirts and DVDs and stuff, and it's like, hey, is
well,
that
I
really,
hope they're
you
putting
know,
it back into useful things. Like,
I hope they are too. But hey, man, I haven't seen any. We started an international campaign here. It's spread around the world. We started off with nothing. We started off with a link on 9/11 Blogger, 911blogger.com. I got to give them props. They have always supported this campaign. They put a link up. They put the call to action for action on the 11th day of every month on the front page back when we started in February, and they've supported us always. But a lot of, like, the so-called leaders in this movement have not, you know, or they've mentioned it once and then never mentioned it again. And it's like, I thought you were into spreading 9/11 truth. But this thing is going on, and it's spreading around the world, and groups are starting everywhere, and we're seeing more action than ever before, and you don't mention it? I find that suspicious.
Oh, I see. You know, you may be talking about someone specific.
Well, or three of them. You know?
One thing for sure is that more people have been bankrupted by their involvement in this. Trying to pursue 9/11 truth or whatever you call
exactly.
it.
Exactly.
You know, this fight for disclosure and justice and open government and no more lies. Trying to pursue this, you know, it tends to break up families. It tends to cause divorces. You know,
well, it's like any real
social
justice
movement.
Unfortunately,
from experience there, you know, it's bankrupt. You know, people have to put themselves into it, you know, for as much as they can stand and as much as they can risk. It ain't easy. I don't want to discourage anyone, by the way, you know, from pursuing what they know to be the right thing.
It's the truth. If you want to be involved with this, I mean, depending on how much you're willing to be involved, it is a job for a warrior. It's not a job for,
and that
you
can
know,
be
it's
very
not
difficult.
A, yeah.
You know, sometimes it can be very hard for a warrior to turn off the warrior part and you know, just be themselves for a time or be still more.
Well, just speaking for myself personally, it has been all consuming. I mean, I said at the opening of the show, I mean, I spend, and the thing is, it's like, it's really obvious. It's like, oh yeah, you got to take a break. You got to mix it up. You got to do this and that.
I mean, we can look at examples of people who, you know, may have gotten unhinged.
Who what?
You know, we can also see examples of people who may have gotten unhinged through too much 24/7. You know, warriorism, not just here, but, you know, in so many other movements.
The casualties.
Right. You know, some of the casualties think they're still leaders. You know, and they're practically babbling on a street corner. You know, you want to avoid that. You know, you want to retain a certain calm and stillness and, you know, be able to step back. I'm not sure I've been able to do that enough.
Yeah.
Or anyone else. You know, I can see some people who were great at times, you know, in their research, and then they couldn't turn off the warrior. They had to keep thinking they were discovering something new. So at some point they go nuts. Right. They go over the edge.
Right.
Not that you can't come back, you know, and again, I don't want to discourage anybody. You know, just looking back again, you know, because we were up to, you know, you said we were talking about how I got involved. But
right.
Actually, we're just talking about how I got to the point of even thinking it, you know, of seeing the case. You know, and then looking around in those early months, I saw people like Paul Thompson with, you know, the beginnings of the timeline, and Nafis Ahmed, who had his first book, The War on Freedom, you know, which is now out in second edition as The War on Truth. He had that out, you know, just 10 months after 9/11, basically summarizing, you know, all of really the most solid evidence that had been gathered at that time in this excellent, well-written and academic package. You know, so suddenly, you know, we were developing resources here, you know, that were, that could be used in this struggle, which, you know, is a very different struggle from your typical social justice struggle, because it's not based in a group, in any specific group that's being oppressed. You know, it's not a question of the poor against the rich, or, you know, one race or one nation or one occupier against another. It's a question about how you perceive the world. You know, it is first a truth movement and second a justice movement. You see what the difficulty is, you know, in calling it a truth movement, then you have to be so rigorous. And, you know, at times you just have to be ready to go into all the dry academic you know, documentary material. You know, it can't just be up with justice, up with truth. You know, I yelled a few slogans.
Right.
You know, to make the difference. That works with we want higher wages.
Right.
You know?
It's crazy because we're dealing with such a complex topic. This is such a complex thing. And you know, it's kind of crazy. I mean, because, you know, slogans have their purpose. This, you know, all these little things. But if we're dealing with something so complex, it's kind of, you know, it's definitely a challenge.
And then you're forced into it by the soundbite culture and, you know, even more so by the constant challenges. It's not like you're going to be usually allowed to develop any single idea. You're going to be, you know, mostly in very hostile environments, especially at the beginning. That's changed a great deal in the last 5 years. There's a lot more room to actually talk about these things, but right after 9/11, of course, it was like, don't speak heresy. You will bring down more attacks on us.
Well, yeah, it was really dark and it was really heavy. I mean, I think we're out of that now, but man, I mean, think back. That was so oppressive.
I remember it well.
That was so oppressive.
Are we really out of it, or are we just back in a more apathetic phase where everyone thinks the market isn't crashing? Even as we speak.
Right.
You know,
well,
and we're not in the middle of a long-term economic and ecological disaster.
Well, you know, here we are at the end of the show. We both knew that this would happen. We've got a lot to talk about. And so tonight we can just look at this as laying the foundation with Nicholas Levis. We got some background, and we're gonna schedule something for next week to continue this conversation. And, Nick, thanks for joining us tonight.
Well, thank you, Cosmo, and you know, I'm really looking forward to it.
Yeah, let's pick this up next week. We will be back on Monday night on Truth Revolution Radio.
Hey there.
Just wait and see sunrise.